Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Fred Monroe, and I'm glad you're with us today. I want to remind you that this is Central Coast Voices and we want you to be part of the discussion. So our topic today is a new chapter for the Central Coast or the San Luis Obispo County Library System and the evolution of our libraries and how things are going. Want to invite you to give us a call. You can certainly call in and participate in this program during the program as you see fit. The phone number is 805-781-3875. That's 781-3875. I will remind you that if you call in earlier in the program, we usually have more opportunity to discuss what's of interest to you. It seems to be a phenomena of radio, which people like to call in the last 10 minutes with long, complicated questions for which we run out of time. So if you're interested in discussing this topic today, please join us early and often as you see fit. This is Community Radio. KCBX intends it to stay community radio, and so your participation is part of why it is community radio, and we're glad you're with us today. I want to remind you of a few other things. Central Coast Voices is basically put together as a way to talk about our community, what's going on, what the ramifications are of both changes, or in some cases the ramifications of staying stagnant in some areas. And then it's part of Action for Healthy Communities, which is a committee and group under the auspices of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. We publish a report every 3 years called Vital Signs, Understanding San Luis Obispo County. And that report is available for free in its entirety as a PDF download at www.actionslo.org. And that's available to you. And our current report, which came out in December of 13, is there. And as are the earlier reports available if you want to look at those and learn about what people are concerned about in San Luis County now, what they were concerned about over the last few years. And we'd like you to be part of that dialogue also. There's been a lot of discussion about libraries. There's been a lot of discussion where I live, which happens to be in Atascadero, because we've been talking about a new library going in there for some time, which is now open. Thank you very much. And we also have had the pleasure of having a new library director for San Luis Obispo County's Public Library. And he's with us today. That's Christopher Barnacle. And we also have Stacy Hunt, who's the director of the Foundation for the San Luis Obispo County Library. And Joe Lorenzi, who is the regional librarian for North County. And they are with us today, and we're going to talk about what's going on with the library. And in some cases, that means what's going on with the library that's happened in the last few months. And in a lot of other cases, as we'll get into it, that translates into what's going on with libraries in general. And when we put this program together, we send out a questionnaire to all of our guests to get some sense of what they see as important to the topic we've asked them to talk about. Before the program, I told Joe this, and I'll tell him again now on the air, and that is that he should probably not be a librarian. He should be a writer, because he wrote some wonderful material in his explanations for things that are important to the library. And I'm going to put him on the spot first, because one of his comments was that libraries are an ever-evolving experiment. And let's start out with that, Joe. Elaborate on that a little more.
Well, when I got that question about, you know, what should we name the topic of this conversation? Mm-hmm. I just wrote it down and I said, you know, something about evolution, because since I've been working in libraries, it has not been a static job. It has just been every day, every month, you know, once I write my memoirs, it'll show that you come into work and it's going to be a different day. Somebody's asking you a different question. Somebody wants to do something differently in the library. There are more people connected to the library. Of course, you get the library's traditionalism in helping people sort of stays, you know, very. Stays the same, but the every day something else comes up. We would like to do this. I've had just in the past week, I've had conversations about, turning libraries into, performance, creating performance series with local musicians and bands and lecture series and things of that nature. So, in Los Osos, they do a yearly craft fair. So these kind of things, we in San Luis they had a maker space last year that was very successful. So day after day, year after year, we're connecting with more and more people, and it's that is that ever evolving landscape.
Libraries are a lot different than they were when libraries are a lot different than they were when I was a kid. Reality is the library is a lot different than it was 10 years ago. It's still a place that I happen to like. I would like to think that the library is no different for me as a 60 plus year old male than it is for a 25 year old person who's never maybe used it very much or believes that the only thing in their life that really is a focus of information is their iPhone or a tablet. One of the things that came up for me when I was putting the program together and we were looking at the notes from all of you was that the library is still the only information source we seem to have that's free. And I think that seems to get lost on people. And Chris, we'll talk a little bit about the fact that you've made some changes in the hold fee, which became a picking up or dropping a dollar in fees became a very amazingly newsworthy topic in this county, which is intriguing. But if I want to belong, if I want an internet connection, and I don't have a laptop to take to the nearest place that might have free Wi-Fi. I generally need to pay about $25 or $30 a month for that. If I want cable television, I got to pay $25 or $30 a month for that. If I want a cell phone that's got internet information on it, I've got to pay $25 or $30 a month for that. And if I want a subscription to about 6 or 7 magazines, I've got to pay maybe $70 or $80 a year for that. So people often tell us that libraries are passé and beyond their usefulness. But a recurring theme for me is it's the only place I can collect information from all the time and spend nothing to do it. It's full of, spend time to do it, but not spend any money to do it. And how does that get seen as where libraries fit in the community?
Well, I think that's an excellent point. And I would expand upon what Joe spoke of earlier with regard to the evolution of library services. The conventional wisdom would hold that the library is a repository of knowledge where you go to a bookshelf and you find whatever title you like, check it out for a number of weeks, and then read it and then bring it back to us. Well, in this ever-evolving world, we have kept up with the times in that we now offer e-content. We address a digital divide for those who don't actually have the means to purchase these devices that you referred to. So in several of our locations, we piloted programs with Chromebooks to where patrons can come in and they can take advantage of using what is effectively a laptop to have access to the information superhighway, the internet, and get access to all of our resources, both in the traditional physical print as well as electronic media form.
Yeah. A number of years ago, I had a business I owned that pretty much on a rainy day, it didn't exist. And there was only so much paperwork I could do to believe I needed to stay with that. My office is in my house. The woman I was married to had a day job that she went to a desk. So those were days that if it was raining, I did not have anything to work on generally for my office work. So historically, every winter when it was raining, I was at the library. I have to confess, sometimes what I was doing at the library was reading a book that I already checked out or some other material that I wanted to look at. But it was also a way that I got to look at the 17 different magazines that I didn't subscribe to and I didn't want to look at every day, but they were there. How tied is our library to people being able to check out and actually acquire materials there, and how much of it is it still a gathering place as I saw it to be?
I think it's a balance of both, really. I mean, bricks and mortar certainly are extremely important, and we've seen that here in the Central Coast with the fundraising sponsored by our friends groups to build new buildings. The community clearly wants bricks and mortar. They want a space in which they can gather. However, when you look at our CERC numbers, you can see very clearly that people want to check out items. And again, that could be print media that's a conventional resource, or going out and downloading magazines through our products like Xenio. So we have access 24/7 to our materials, but then again, having that face-to-face interaction in a bricks and mortar environment is extremely important.
Let me remind you that this is Central Coast Voices, and we're talking about the library, the public library, and how it's used and what's available to us. We'd like you to be part of this discussion, and our phone number is 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. This is KCBX Public Radio. We would like you to be part of the discussion. And having said that, we have Stacy. You're from the Library Foundation.
Correct.
So,
but I wanted to jump in on something that Chris just said. Besides just being a place to go to find these resources, the librarians are also an amazing resource for any research that you're doing on a variety of topics. So people can say, well, I can just Google it, but you don't know what you're getting on Google. You don't know if it's a reliable source. And I read a very interesting article recently by a journalist who realized, as he gave the same research project to friends, other journalist friends of his all over the world, and they all got different results on Google. So Google is giving you what it thinks you might want, depending on your location and what it already knows about you from other searches. So you're not getting everything there is out there on Google that a librarian could direct you to who's so well-trained.
Yeah, all of our kids believe that if it's on Wikipedia, it's got to be the absolute truth. And now the flip side of that is, just because somebody wrote it in a book doesn't make it the absolute truth, but it becomes somewhat more vetted in most cases, I guess, too.
That's right.
We have four reference librarians that work in the county and that work for all of us and work in our large libraries. And when you go and visit them, I mean, you will be able to, they will direct you not only to one resource, a reliable resource, but they take pride in giving you as much information as possible that would make your experience with information as valuable as possible. They did a study in San Francisco to show how much money libraries actually save people, and it's a little fun calculator you can go online and find. And books, CDs, materials, and in our case, we were lending out laptops. But also, I wanted to comment on, the library as a social service and a place where people actually can go in and say good morning and have, a conversation with somebody that works for the county and will, get things done for them in an intellectual capacity. So, speaking with a lot of people about what they like and what they're interested in and what their pursuits are, I mean, I think that's the great thing about working in libraries as well.
Yeah, it's, if you want to go sit with people, if you're by yourself or you're just looking for someone to talk to, but you don't want to go sit in a Starbucks, because frankly, a Starbucks costs you about $4 or $5 to go there and sit and talk to somebody. And well, I guess you can sit in Starbucks for a long time without buying anything, but they frown upon that. We don't have a lot of gathering places in our community that are not tied to the purchase of something. Are you seeing a lot of people who still come to the library and literally spend the whole day? And how does that library user fit into the person who comes in, checks out a book, and is gone in 10 seconds?
Well, this is why I fell in love with this career. I know of no other organization, place, business in which you can have the kind of interactions that you have in libraries. It welcomes anyone and everyone, all walks of life. You have the opportunity to gain perspectives that you'd never have on your own. It's traveling without leaving and going anywhere. Mm-hmm. It's really amazing. And so, we absolutely see repeat patrons who come in and spend their entire day there, whether they're reading newspapers, reading periodicals, just conversing with their neighbors, catching up with their local librarian. And how, I'm sorry, the end of that question, how does that relate to checkouts?
Years ago, it seemed like people that were just using a library, not for reference, would come in, they'd find two current bestsellers or whatever they wanted, they'd check them out, and they were gone in 30 seconds. Is the library doing anything to get people to naturally linger beyond, Joe talked about being able to do music and informational events?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, we provide this bridge for the digital divide in which people can have access to resources they may not have on their own. Moreover, the beauty of the library is we have both. We're not sitting here following you and looking at what you've purchased, what you've been interested in. We're not keeping a record of what your checkouts are or anything else. We're just here as someplace that is open and accessible for the community and what you do with it, so long as you are actively engaged and not bothering other people, it's your library. So it's whatever it is that you want to make of it. So I wouldn't say that we favor one over the other. You know, there's certainly a business model that says, let's look at a cost per item, cost per person. That's just not a model that we embrace. And that's evident in just looking at the diversity of our branches and just the location. The distance that we cover is almost the size of the state of Connecticut. So it's really, again, I have an active selfish interest in this, but I'm absolutely blown away by what library services bring to the community.
Yeah. Stacey, go ahead.
I love thinking back on how I've approached the library through the stages of my life. When I was a kid, it was a big deal. My parents couldn't afford to buy me books, so I'd go check out an armload of them and just devour them. And then when I had children, it was a big deal for them to go back to the library. And they grew up in Los Osos, where they would have activities for them. They on Wednesday nights, some guy would put up his telescope, and we'd look at the moon or look at planets, and they had programs for them. And now that I'm older, my kids are gone, and I take care of my elderly mother, and I go in and check out books for her. And I'm one of those 30-second ones now where I'm in and out with an armload of books for her. But when Joe was in charge of the Los Osos Library, he had events out there, and he had a group of wonderful chamber music people that I took two of my elderly relatives to go watch them play and talk to the other people in Los Osos. And we attend the book sales out there that the Friends of the Library put on, and my use of the library has changed with my life over the years, but it's always been there.
Yeah. There's a particular event that happened at Atascadero, and I can't remember how many years ago it was, but there was a retrospective on Joe Schwartz, the photographer. And I had never met him before, had no idea he lived locally. I now understand he actually became a local because he had family here as he got older. But that was an opportunity that probably would not have been available to me. There are not many places other than the public library that we're going to put on a retrospective of some of the photographic work of Joe Schwartz. So that kind of thing that comes up.
You know, that's something that we do, the librarians in the county and really all of our staff like to pursue things that, you know, that we like to find people. We like to find what people can bring to the library. In the case of Joe Schwartz or the San Luis Obispo Opera or, you know, a local author, what we like to make the information come alive for people when they visit the library so that they can really see it in different forms. You know, to piggyback on what you guys were talking about earlier about, you know, the library being a space for different kinds of patrons, you know, different kind of patrons have different kinds of time allotments or time freedom. So you have certain patrons that come in, you know, daily. You have certain patrons that come in weekly. You have patrons that, you know, maybe come in monthly, but they all have different, you know, goal needs. And I like to say that when you interact with a patron, you really need to see, you know, where they're at, you know, in their day or what they actually need. Many patrons come in and don't see the full landscape of everything that we're doing at the library. They may want to come in for a bestseller, or they may want to come in and talk to Chris or I about a library policy, or they want to bring their children in to do a story time. And there's lots of different colors on that rainbow.
The library system we have here, Christopher, we probably need to back up and talk about what black gold is, because I think most of us who use the library know it's some kind of cooperative program that you have with other libraries, but we probably don't understand what it is. I know if I can't find a book locally, black gold will help me find it, but I think it's probably far more elaborate than the layperson appreciates.
Yeah, Black Gold is really amazing. Coming into this county and having this set up for us already, it really works to the benefit of the taxpayer, in that we're basically leveraging our collective budgets to allow for a richer and broader collection in which you can place holds on or in which you can take home. So in that, we run from as far south as Santa Barbara, all the way up to Paso Robles. So there are five of us that sit on this board, five different library systems, and we try to make decisions that are in the best interest not only of our local patrons, but also collectively to benefit the whole Central Coast here. And the idea that you can place a hold free of charge for any item within the Black Gold collection is just, it's phenomenal. I mean, that to me is what libraries are about.
That's something that you brought to the table when you came here and made big news, the dropping of the hold fee. I guess for a lot of people, the thought of spending a dollar to hold a book was intrusive or difficult to – that a government library should be able to provide them with literature without an expense involved.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we came here and we started looking at our policies and practices and – when you look at the dollar hold fee specifically, we just felt like it was something that really smacked in the face of what free public libraries should be. They should be free public libraries. And if we create an artificial barrier to that knowledge, then we're really doing a disservice to the community. Now, you know, it was a significant revenue source for us, but we've figured out ways in which we can be more efficient and work things to where it doesn't affect the end user, that being the patron, to make things.
Well, I guess since you're a county government agency, you can hopefully answer this question, at least in a round figure. What was the loss of revenue? What is the revenue per year, or what was it on just the hold revenue prior to dropping it?
Last year it was around $95,000. So we're an $8.5 million budget, which, you know, in the scope of things, in the scheme of things, it's relative drop in the bucket. You know, one could argue that a dollar is such a nominal fee. Why would you do away with that? But the fact of the matter is, we serve all different populations. And for me, if people want to make donations to the library, they can do it through the foundation. They can do it through the Friends group. They can do it directly through support of volunteering their time. I just don't want to set up this kind of, again, artificial barrier to a service that we provide, and I feel like this was the move, and the response we've gotten from the public has been that this has been the move that was necessary and the right action to take.
And they also noticed you expanded hours in a lot of cases. Where'd the money come from for that?
Again, we've just been very creative. We have an extremely resilient staff, as Joe has spoken of, and Stacy. The skill set that our librarians bring to the table in terms of services provided to the community, along with our general support staff across the board, have taken and they've done job sharing, they've repurposed some of their jobs, we've worked on the number of hours in which we actually have off-desk time and whittled those down to where we can offer more public hours available to the open our doors. So
off-desk time, can you define that a little?
Yeah, so basically, you know, we've got in most of our locations three service desks. So you have an adult services, youth services, and maybe a
circulation
desk where you – thank you, Joe. Joe keeps me straight here. So where we have actual public service desks and public interaction. So when I speak of off-desk time, I'm talking about the behind-the-scenes work, whether that's processing holds, checking materials in and out, planning for programming. Mm-hmm. Joe – What else do we do?
Well, and Chris is, you know, right on track. I mean, that's what we do. The thing I think Chris actually brought to the table for all of us was to say, you know, when can you do this during the day? How does your day look? And actually got us to look at our scheduling and schedules and the work we've been doing, and actually get us to, like you said, repurpose and rethink and come up with, you know, when you have a goal and you have a strategy in front of you, you know, a lot of us sat down and said, you know, there are ways to find, you know, to do these jobs and find and make the library work and proceed.
Yeah. Well, one of my frustrations historically with the library has been that unless you're a stay-at-home parent that doesn't have a day job, most of the library hours are in conflict or have been in conflict with having an 8-to-5 job, and which meant you had to have the luxury of either being retired, not having to work, or for some reason not being able to work in order to use the library a lot of the time. I guess I haven't looked at the full expansion of hours that you've got, but are we addressing that need more now?
Absolutely. We felt the same. We felt as if you basically hit the nail on the head with those three populations that we felt were able to access our library consistently. And in order to accommodate more people, bring in more customers through our doors, we felt like not only did we need to change the number of hours in which we were open, but more importantly, we needed to change the types of hours we were open. So we basically, through a budget neutral process, now the misconception that's been going around is we had this budget windfall, which we didn't. We did this completely budget neutral, and we basically shifted our hours to later in the evening. So if you look at our big three libraries, Atascadero, Rio Grande, and SLO, we've shifted from a 37-hour, 36-hour work week in terms of open hours to the public to a 50-hour across the board. So we are now working from 10 to 7 Monday through Thursday and then 10 to 5 on Friday and Saturday. So what we did in the process is we looked at our staffing capacity, and then we went out and we had a survey for the public asking, what are hours that would be more convenient for you? What are the types of things that you'd like to see in your library? And we've tried to marry the two and make it happen. Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to remind you, we're talking about the San Luis Obispo County Library System and both why we have it, how in the world it still exists, and what the changes have been with it. We'd like you to be part of the discussion. That's at 781-3875. We would appreciate your calls. 805-781-3875. If you have questions or concerns that you'd like to bring up about the library system, or just general questions about libraries and literature and how it's used and how we address it, please give us a call, 781-3875. And I would encourage you to call us now, as opposed to the proverbial 8 minutes before the end of the radio show call we get, that we often have to say, sorry, we don't have time to fit you in. There is this misconception, and I guess, Stacy, I want to talk to you maybe about misconceptions in the library. I realize you're not a staff member. You're a library foundation director with a goal of keeping the library going. I'm curious as to what kind of person becomes involved in a library foundation. Is it all the old people who just believe they have to keep books, and that's the only people who care about preserving the library? And how does that get addressed?
Boy, we have quite a spread of people on the foundation as far as interest. Some are former librarians. Some worked down at Cal Poly. Mm-hmm. Me, I've just interested in libraries in general. We have people who are graduates of Leadership SLO. Two people from that organization are in. So there's an interesting breadth on the foundation. And it was formed in 1998 to advocate on behalf of the library system countywide. So it's a little bit different than the friends groups that support a particular library. Mm-hmm. We support all the libraries.
What kind of things do you do? I mean, obviously the library is a general fund source through the county. So the Board of Supervisors has a sharp pen, which is tough. What does the foundation do besides helping fulfill financial things that you think are important?
Trying to bring attention to libraries and to advocate, like we were saying. It's not, you know, Google isn't the only answer, and to try to educate the young people in library use and the importance of it so they just grow up as lifetime library users. We have been trying to make up some of the budget shortfalls. You know, the library gets cut like everything else. So we've been supporting the summer reading program that the library has that goes on all summer, where the children set reading goals for themselves, and if they complete them, they get a free book that they get to take home. And so the foundation helps to pay for the books. For the teen readers, we secure a prize of an iPod for them every year. If they finish their goals, they get to enter a contest in a drawing for the iPod. And then some of the smaller branches don't have friend groups that are raising money for them, so we give them money to have entertainment programs like puppet shows and things like that during the summertime when the kids are out of school.
Yeah, you're either starting a Books and Authors series or you already have it going now. But
right, we used to do a Book and Author Festival in conjunction with the Writers Conference out at Cuesta, mm-hmm. and we had our last one the first year I was on the board, so I don't have a lot of experience with them. But they were free events; they weren't fundraisers for the library, so we were scratching our heads trying to figure out a new way to fundraise for the libraries, and we hit upon this idea because myself and several other people were driving all the way to Santa Barbara for their arts and lecture series and seeing really fascinating authors give talk, mm-hmm. like Doris Kearns Goodwin and Dave Barry. And so we thought, why can't we have that here? There's no one bringing those authors here. And so that was our goal. So we're launching that this year. Our first author is going to be Ann Perry, who's going to speak September 19th as part of the Writers' Conference out at the Cuesta PAC. And we will have tickets available soon for that. She's a really interesting person. She writes like Victorian mysteries and internationally known. And we're going to have two more in the winter and spring of 2015.
Does either the library or the foundation have this secret list of authors who live locally that we don't know about or that are kind of hiding out? I think we've had a number of people. Well, I'm serious. Every once in a while I hear about some author who lives in the county that doesn't talk about the fact that they live in San Luis County because they moved here so nobody would know who they are.
Do you guys know of any? I don't.
We actually can't discuss that on the radio, but I will say it may or may not exist.
Yeah.
One point of clarification, if I may, yeah. We spoke of funding, and the library is actually a special revenue fund. So all the monies that we get, I'd say the majority, it's like 80%.
So define a special revenue fund.
It comes through property taxes. So the general fund is actually only like 7% of our actual funding for the library. The benefit to us as a library is whatever we don't spend, we put back into our budget the next year. So my argument is it holds us to be more fiscally conservative, and we really have to see how it is that we can stretch our dollar and make the most bang for the buck for our patrons. We certainly rely on the foundation. I can't say enough about the work that they do and the benefits they provide to the community through their efforts, along with our friends groups throughout the county. So I just think it's a point of clarification that along with the hours of operation, you know, it's not like we're sitting here flush with cash, mm-hmm. But I think that we're moving in the right direction towards expanding our hours. Expanding our services, including our hours. Yeah. And I would say that I'm extremely excited about this Book and Author Festival because I feel like over the next year it will really serve as a litmus test for us to see how the community wants to engage with the library and what kind of events they want to see happen. I mean, we see local or events in local areas like Santa Barbara that you see.
Oh, and they're standing room only. They're just packed. There's a great interest in them. And one of the goals we have is one of the authors we bring, we want to be a young adult author so that that age group can go see a hero that they've been reading their books and talk to them about the creative process, because those talks usually involve question and answer periods.
Do we dare talk about the one that lives locally, or is that maybe he's not considered a young adult? He may be considered a teen author, Jay Asher.
Do you guys know?
I know of Jay Asher.
Yeah.
But
and Jay's done a lot of local work already, visiting libraries, and you know, he's been, you know, he's been. He used to work for the library system, and he's really very. He always visits and says hello and does programs for all the libraries.
He's
in Slo
done
County.
Some programs through the county office of education for teacher work and things like that. I just didn't know if
yeah,
he'd done
great,
anything with
great,
the library.
Great, great story for us.
Fascinating author also, and fascinating individual. Very, very good public speaker also.
One of the things we're going to also collaborate on is that. The local arts foundation has a Poetry Out Loud program where children memorize poems and compete across the county, across the state, and across the country. And we're going to have some of their young poets be our opening act, basically the warm-up act for some of these authors, so that the public has more exposure to that wonderful program.
I want to apologize in advance, Chris, for not telling you I was going to drop this one on you because I'm curious about it. There was a letter to the editor in New Times last week from Gordon Fugley of Atascadero about, and did you read it by any chance?
I didn't actually.
Okay.
So,
he was talking about the fact that we seem to sell off too many books because we can't figure out how to hold on to them. We don't have stacks. We don't have reference stacks available. We tend to just run out of space, so we get rid of things that historically probably should be held on to.
It's a great point. It's a constant conversation, and it is a balance that we have to really consider. When you think of the library in its traditional form and its conventional format, it would be, again, that kind of idea of a repository of knowledge where we keep everything that we purchase forever. The fact of the matter is we have limited space, we have limited real estate, and there is a constant need to update and refresh our stacks. And so what we try to do is keep that those items that are circulating, keep those items that are of significance, and weed, you know, that's the technical term here, pull those materials in which we feel that have gone past their shelf life, so to speak. I don't know, Joe, if you want to expand upon that.
Yeah, and it's, you know, in some cases it's really difficult to, you know, find a book on the shelf that, you know, is not circulating and our libraries do not have a lot of space. I mean, this is not, you know, the San Francisco Public Library System or the Chicago, or we don't have archival space. And I think Mr. Fugley had made a point about archiving them somewhere, which actually, you know, isn't a bad idea, but the logistics of it all, you know, our current libraries just don't have the space to continue growing and not be able to weed. So at the same time, when librarians, you know, I love books, so when I come across something that isn't moving and you know, you have to take a look at it and say, well, you know, three other books on the same topic are taking up the shelf space, and you know, we just need to move it along, and hopefully, if demand becomes popular again, we'll try and put it back in this in somewhere. And we also try and keep, you know, as much one copy of everything in our branches as much as possible. So, you know, we're not totally eliminating it, but sometimes, you know, also oftentimes things become damaged or worn, or you know, and so we do try and replace as much as possible. But it is a large task because it's, you know, it's a wealth of information. It's our system has, I think, more than 300,000 to 400,000 titles. So, I mean, it's a lot of information to keep track of.
That's a lot. That's a lot of books. I mean, that's probably, if I had to guess, I would have thought a lot less than that. So that's a tremendous amount of material.
I mean, books, CDs, magazines, kits for children, all sorts of things. You know.
If we go back to the beginning of the show, we can talk about that evolution as well. And this, we never reach a point of perfection. And it is certainly a process we're looking at. I mean, we certainly look at items that are more timely. Let's say if it's nearing a holiday, we would want to put that more front and center. I mean, we know for a fact that despite the adage that you can't judge a book by its cover, the way to circulate an item is to have it face out and allow people to see it. If we bury books all with the spines facing out, it's not likely to circulate. So we pull items, let's say for Halloween, and we'll go put them off shelf to where we can effectively increase our shelf space. Now, one of our most popular items, which is arguably controversial, is DVDs. Some people would argue that we shouldn't have entertainment available when you have Netflix and other resources available. We could talk about that later if you wish. But, you know, I can see where an item that circulates and we just don't have room, where we could put that in a back room somewhere, still make it quote-unquote discoverable through our catalog, allow someone not to just, you know, see it by serendipity and pull it off the shelf, rather place a hold on it and then still have access to that material. So we're looking at evolution here.
Yeah. You have a lot of music also, which as I looked through the music collection, the new Atascadero Library, I've now at least been to once to check it out. And that not to imply I haven't checked anything out. I actually check out audiobooks and ebooks. And so that process goes through my computer. But I was surprised at the collection of music, not that it existed, but it tends to be focused more on some cultural and heritage type music. There was more things I'd classify as folk Americana and classical music, things that you wouldn't necessarily think would get a lot of exposure, but it also may not be even readily available if you didn't have it at a library.
That's something, and that could be the same thing for books as well. I mean, we like to, keeping track of, that cultural landscape and making sure that everything, that we have a representation of, all of that information. I'm going to, say it into the microphone. It's not easy. I mean, there's so much culture that our America has to offer, whether it be hip hop music or folk music or Latin music or, European music. I mean, everything. I mean, so, to be able to present, I think is the word, a healthy, attractive information for people to discover that's become our job, really, is to get through that information. I tell everybody, take something off the shelf. My staff, when I say everybody, I said, put it out for people to look at. Put it right in front of them so they walk past and say, oh, I would have never seen that. And we joke around when people are in the stacks. And when we say stacks, they're looking at library spines. And that's the traditional way of looking at things. But if you look at people, they're all getting library neck. Their necks are crooked and they're tilted. And yeah. Then now they need chiropractors. What we should do is, put that information, like Chris says, available, present it to them. And that's, I like that part of librarianship.
Yeah. I want to remind you, this is Central Coast Voices, and we're talking about the San Luis Obispo County Library System and many aspects of it. If you'd like to be part of this discussion, we have a few minutes left. The phone number is 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. This is a community radio program on a community radio station, and we'd like you to be part of the discussion if you choose to be so. And we're glad that we can talk about this. I guess it's a topic that you may get asked often, but I've never heard it addressed. That is, how do you pick what titles get purchased to put on a library shelf?
It's just like the author list. It's a non-spoken art. I am absolutely floored. I myself, as a librarian, am truly floored every time I go into the pack and I say, oh my gosh, I just heard about this title on NPR, and type it in, and magically it's there available. Maybe there's a little wait list, but we have it. And so I can't say enough. I mean, that is one of the skill sets that our librarians bring.
How did you get it in the first place?
The process. So they look at reviews. They look at how the merit of the item. They look at popularity of it. There's a number. I'd love to say that we have an algorithm, but it's people driven, and it's done through people with good head and shoulders and on their shoulders, and they just, again, I cannot say enough about the art of selection and collection development. It's something that is not in my skill set as a librarian.
And you can have a great book to come out in a journal, and you see, and you're like, wow, that's an amazing book. And we have to weigh it against several other books because we have a limited budget and say, oh, that would be amazing for the to read. And I know there's people out there to read. And then there's like there's three other books on the same page that have, you know, will have more, you know, value to more people. Hmm. So it's a hard decision.
Okay, so let's see. Okay, I'm sorry, not quite clear what the question is, but I'm sorry, we've got Tim in Los Osos. Tim, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, what was your question?
Yes, my question is, how does the county libraries go about surveying the interests of their patrons, given that there is such a broad cultural landscape out there, as Joe put it?
That's a fantastic question. I think that's one of our many challenges. The public library is so amorphous in the sense that we have to be everything to everybody with a limited budget. So one of the things that we have to do is get out there, do outreach, shake hands, talk to people, see what their interests are. Our hours of operation is a great example where we put out a public survey and ask the public what hours are convenient for you. You know, any time you visit one of our locations, you're more than welcome to speak to any staff member and provide feedback. We have comment cards in which you can fill out. They all come to me, and you know, we weigh the impact of the request and see how it is that we can make it happen.
And we do have statistics that we look at and analyze, and all of us have to take a look and say, well, like I said, which book will work in this setting, and we have to make that choice. So it's a professional choice that we make.
Thanks very much. Thanks for the call, Tim.
You're welcome. Thank you now.
And, you know, we haven't talked a lot about electronic material. It's something that there, you know, Roger Ebert's current, well, not current, his current memoir was a precursor to the movie that's now out, is in my Droid phone, and I listened. I have to confess that I actually have this reward punishment system with electronic books because I have to walk every day and I don't like to do it, and I'm not motivated by any standard of, gee, I can walk faster, I can walk further. So I actually find a book I really like and put it in my phone, and I'm only allowed to listen to it while I'm walking. Actually, there's an exception to that. If I walked today, I can listen to the book if I'm driving, but I can't listen to the book while I'm driving if I didn't walk first. But anyway, so for me, that was way convoluted. Anyway, but electronic books are very important to me, and I probably use the library system more from that standpoint. My wife likes to read on her Nook, and so she downloads books on her Nook. If I'm reading that way, I prefer a piece of paper, and I will still read a paper book. Is that a significant portion of your library patronage is through the electronic system, I guess?
It's growing, and we absolutely embrace it. I think it's something that we find is extremely important. I think it's time, place, utility. If you're going to go on a vacation, take it to the beach, you don't want to lug 10 novels with you. Mm-hmm. You take the ebook. You want to listen to it in your car. You're not going to be reading and driving, I hope. You're going to be listening to it through your device. So I think our biggest challenge is finding content that is available to public libraries. You as a consumer have greater access to materials because there is a dollar behind that in every transaction. Whereas every transaction with a library, they don't necessarily see that. Now, they've created some limitations that, you know, checkouts only happen 26 times before we need to re-up, what have you. But it's something that we embrace and we think is really important. Joe?
I was just going to say, I think it's something like currently like 10% of our circulation right now is e-books. So out of everything that we circulate, it might be more than that. I'm not sure. I think that was the last statistic.
I'm actually encouraged to hear it's that low. Which means that because I know it's out there a lot, and if it's only 10% of your circulation, that means there's still a tremendous amount of paper moving in and out of the building every day, which is good to hear.
And there certainly is. I mean, we Atascadero had on their first day of opening, I think had something like 2,700 checkouts.
Oh my
gosh. Okay. that was DVDs, movies, and CDs, and books, but lots of books. The things that we were checking out, we see the most of are obviously fiction, popular fiction, and children's books. I mean, they are just going out you know, parents are walking away with 20 books at a time to read to their children. I think you have a lot of these different situations too that happen where, you know, the group of young moms and dads are reading things that say, take your children to the library, mm-hmm. get them invested in print materials. And I think we're really at a time right now where I think a lot of writing is being done on how to analyze the print material, how to analyze what we're seeing, what the effects are of the digital materials, and you know, how that's going to move in the future. So
yeah, we were talking before about how you select books. Are there, I can't think of a better word for this, are there propaganda channels where people basically send you books for free in hopes you'll put them in circulation? And how do you address that?
So absolutely. We always get people self-promoting. We have a number of vendors who we work with who provide basically, I don't know how else to describe it other than a jobber catalog saying what's newest, latest, greatest coming out. And, you know, I'd say just like Stacy refers to Google, and that it's going to tailor to whatever your specific search is. We get some direction as well. You know, whomever puts their most money behind marketing and advertising of their title, they're more likely to get more traction in New York Times bestseller list. So obviously it depends upon the quality of the work, because it's going to fall on its face if people go out and read something and then it starts getting terrible reviews. But you've got social media. You look at Goodreads, applications like that, where you're seeing peer reviews and people are saying, you know what, Stacy, I just read this book. It's fantastic. You should read it too. Stacy then goes out and it just becomes this real viral type of environment. So it's all over the board. Again, it's an art in my mind.
It's Stacy, do people involved with the foundation get involved in the discussion about what should be here? Now, I'm not suggesting that you have some direct control over saying we won't support the library if they do this, or we'll only support the library if they do that. But I'm hoping it's part of a dialogue that's involved.
Oh, absolutely. Chris comes to every one of our meetings and gives us a full report on what's happening.
With or without a catcher's mask.
We love Chris. And sometimes the other directors like Joe will come and mm-hmm. give input. And we respond to the requests for the needs. We've been lucky to have some very generous people in this county make large endowments to the foundation to spend on our libraries. One of them was Barbara Baltimore. Another one was Sarah Day. So we administer these, and when they come in with a request, Chris's predecessor, Brian Reynolds, wanted to do a survey of all the libraries and the patrons and what they used, how often they came in, and that was very expensive, and we matched monies from them to make that happen. We've been using these monies that people have donated to purchase early literacy computer stations for their Rio Grande Library. We helped put in money to create a Captain's Family Corner for the Atascadero Library when they told us that ebooks were taking off, but patrons didn't know how to download them onto their Nooks or their other equipment. We purchased 8 iPads and had the staff trained so that they could go around to all the branches and train people on how to make these e-things happen. I haven't learned yet. I still use regular books.
I don't know how many Overdrive. Oh, there's the Overdrive. Just download the Overdrive application. There's multiple applications, I guess, that work in different ways for different people.
So they make their needs known. We have actually a formal process where they ask for grant monies. Sometimes they were close, like, to finishing the buildings, and they were just a little bit short, and we'd give them money to do that. So we're there for them when they need us.
Absolutely, and we appreciate it all the way. And I'd say it is a dialogue. I mean, there's a board member who we've had many amicable conversations and disagreements on what kind of formats we collect. And going back to movies as entertainment, you know, we had a disagreement about that. But it's fine. We can have a dialogue, talk about why it is, how it is we need things, and then move forward. And you know, the conventional wisdom would be that movies are there for entertainment purposes only. We've actually seen where people with who are non-native English speakers can use movies to learn English. So we use that as an educational tool as well.
Yeah. We're getting towards the end of the program, and I guess I'm curious, is there anything that the public doesn't understand about the library that you'd like them to understand that we missed I'm sure we missed a lot of things that you can talk about a library for more than an hour.
I would say that, you know, I probably have to say this, but you know, I would say that we have one of the hardest working staffs in the county. And when people think about library work, we get everything from, you know, since I've been a librarian for about 9 years now, you know, I've gotten everything. So what do you do all day? Read and, you know, like, what do you sit in your office all, you know, all day? And it's, you know, just all over the board. But mostly the staff at our libraries are just constantly interacting with people. And that constant interaction, I mean, it is something that I really give our staff a lot of respect for, because, you know, all of them go into every conversation with a person wanting to help them. I mean, the joke is, you know, you don't get into libraries for, you know, because we're all going to be rich and famous someday. So, you know, we get into libraries because we help people, and libraries are wellness centers. And for those of us who get a chance, we can actually help people. So my shout out to the listeners are, when you go into a library, you know, and you're interacting with the staff, just know that they interact with, you know, close to, you know, thousands of people a month, and they're trying to help.
Well, I appreciate having this discussion, because I think what we do with libraries and how we use them is going to be very important. And I guess, Chris, in 25 words or less, what are we not doing yet that you'd like to see us do in this county?
It's a new chapter. So our next steps are really developing programming, having events, working with the foundation, the friends groups, really model programs that are specific to the individual community. So I just encourage you to come out to the libraries, interact with staff, give us feedback, let us know what it is you desire in your libraries, and have fun.
Yeah, it's free stuff out there, so get your library card.
Yeah, and it, now it doesn't even cost you a dollar to put anything on hold. Well, I thank you very much, and I'll remind you folks that we'll make sure that there's some information for you on the website also, so you can find out some more about the Library Foundation and what's coming up on September 19th. That'll get posted within the next 24 hours, and so people can find it there. Or I believe if you just Google San Luis Obispo County Library, you'll probably get to the right place, and they can find about the foundation and the library. And I thank you all for joining us today. I want to remind you that this is Central Coast Voices. I'm glad you've been with us today. This is a production of Action for Healthy Communities, which is a project of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. And we're glad that we can be part of the discussion about what's going on in our society and what's going on in our community, both on a daily basis and yesterday and tomorrow, as the case may be. Next week, Chris Kington Barker will be here, and she'll be taking a look at new ways for our community to generate clean energy. Chris will be talking with the leaders of an organization called SLO Clean Energy about ways we can pool our efforts together in the creation of locally based power generation projects known as community choice aggregations. Join Chris and her guests as they discuss ways to expand the local economy and create jobs in the clean energy fields, and it'll be a fascinating discussion. There's lots of stuff out there, and it'll be wonderful. Your input for Central Coast Voices can be heard by giving us a call at 543-2323 or contacting us by email at voices@kcbx.org. I want to thank my guests today, Christopher Barnacle, Stacy Hunt, and Joe Lorenzi. And it's been a pleasure being with you today. This has been Central Coast Voices. Stay tuned for This American Life with Ira Glass coming up next. Remind you, this is Community Public Radio, and this is a community you're part of. Thanks for joining us.